Hello and welcome in again to the Worship Life Podcast with Mike Harland. I am your co-host, Brian Brown. This is Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee. We're in the B.B. McKinney Studios.
Historic.
They are historic. They're majestic, I would also add. And high atop the Lifeway Tower.
High atop ninth floor.
Mm-hmm. You can't get any higher. You'd have to go on the roof.
We would have to get on the roof.
Yes.
To be higher than we are in Lifeway.
Check local listings. But a cold, windy day today. I don't want to go on the roof. We're going to stay right here.
Stay here inside
the
beautiful
warm environs.
Yes.
Of B.B. McKinney Studios.
Yes.
Mike, we're going to talk today about something that, you know, I was not. I know this will be a shock to all of the music ministries I was involved in, but I was not a formally trained person
in
music ministry.
Yeah.
I'm not formally trained in anything, also not formally trained in music ministry, self-taught guy. You went to the more classic route with an undergraduate degree and a degree from a seminary, New Orleans
Baptist Theological Seminary, the School of Providence and Prayer.
Whoa, say that.
Yes.
He said that with his hand over his
heart, in case
you're listening from that school. So, calling today's podcast Lessons They Didn't Teach Me in School.
Yeah.
For me, it was because I didn't go. For you, you went. And even then, there's some things that we encounter on staff and in ministry that no amount of college seems to prepare us for.
You know, the truth of the matter is, Brian, we do study the music discipline, and often we'd study in the modern academic settings. We'll study the worship discipline and a theological perspective and other ministry preparation. And certainly there are classes that in the administrative part of seminary preparation, if somebody goes to seminary, that they might have studied some of these kind of things. But in ministry, it's just where people live.
Yeah.
And when you are with people, you're going to be put in situations routinely that that are in settings that you really you probably have never dealt with before.
Right.
As a younger minister or as someone that's coming up into ministry, often you will find yourself in the middle of something and you've never seen it before, you've never been there before. And there's some funny stories along the way in these ministry moments. Yeah. But there, you know, along the way, through trial and error and just the passage of time, there's some things that I've learned and that we've learned as we've done, and you've been on staff of church too,
absolutely,
so you know. They're just
many
things
years
that you learn by doing it and honestly by modeling it or following people that are modeling it. And I've worked with some great pastors that understood this. I've worked with some pastors that, you know, weren't as ministerially oriented. That's kind of the topic for today. What are some of those simple guidelines that would help anybody that's in a ministry setting really perform a vital ministry and not be a problem?
Amen. So, Mike, let's start it like this. I'm thinking, again, untrained guy. I was still had teen next to my name when I was first started working on church staffs.
Yeah.
I think you.
Me
you
too.
Might,
yeah,
have
I was 19.
Well.
Yeah.
So, one of the first things I had to encounter as a young teenager, fortunately, that time I was on staff with my grandfather, later with my father, and they helped me through these things. But hospital visitation to me was the only places I visited other than the church when I was a kid was a basketball gymnasium. So I totally unprepared the first time I went on hospital visitation with my father or my grandfather. So that's the kind of a thing I'm guessing, Mike.
Yeah.
I don't know how many hours they spent when you were getting your
music ministry degree
on hospital. But a lot of times that falls to the ministry of music, particularly if the person who's in the hospital is part of the music ministry.
Well, that's a perfect example of the kind of ministry setting that can occur just in the day in and day out of leading a ministry. And just to make this point right away about that, there may be some musicians out there that would say, you know what, the church doesn't really ask me to do that. We've got a pastoral care ministry. They do that. They handle all of that. And I'm not really involved in that. And I would say to that person, I think you need to rethink that because you're missing an opportunity to have an influence and an impact on the people you serve with. And maybe you don't do the general hospital list of the church. Maybe you should. That may be another podcast. But there are going to be moments when your guitar player, when your piano player, when the singer, when the person that runs the sound, they're going to have some kind of family event or crisis. and your absence will cost you much more than the energy you'd have to spend to for your presence to have the impact. And I want to tell you, I've said this for years, but there will be very few things you'll regret doing, but there will be many things you regret not doing if you don't get involved in ministry, because it's a really, are you an artist or are you a shepherd? And if you're in a leadership position in a church, then you've got some shepherding responsibilities, whether they think of you that way or not. I won't name the person, but there's a guy that if I called his name, a lot of people would know, that was thinking about taking a ministry assignment in a church. They'd been a very well-known and very established artist, but they had been given the opportunity to take a ministry position as a worship leader in a church. And this person was asking me about that. And my first answer to him was, hey, how do you feel about gallbladder surgery?
Yeah.
And he's like, what do you mean? I said, well, even though the church may think of you as the musician, if you're leading a ministry in a church, you're going to have those ministry moments where you've got to step in and act in a pastoral and ministerial way. And so we talked through all of that, and I'm glad to say this guy went to that church, and he's still at that church, and has done a masterful job, not because of anything I told him, but he embraced the ministerial aspect of the responsibility and is doing it really, really quite well. But hospital visitation, that's a pretty good example. So let me just kind of I'm going to play through a hospital visit in my mind and kind of talk you through what I would be thinking if I'm going to a hospital to visit someone. First of all of what I will do will be very affected by the nature of my relationship with this person. Is this Miss Johnson that I've only met and isn't in my ministry at all, but is a member of our church and I barely know her? Or is this Debbie, who is one of my feature vocalists, and we've shared a lot of ministry events together, and I know quite well, and her husband and my wife and the four of us have cooked out. And I mean, the nature of the relationship with the person I'm serving in that setting is going to have a lot to do with the way I approach it. If possible, I'm going to let them know I'm coming ahead of time. And in the age of cell phone usage, there's absolutely no reason you can't do that. I love to get family's blessings when I'm going by to visit someone, especially if it's someone in a chronic situation or in a very serious situation. I will reach out to a daughter, to a son, to a spouse and say, I'd like to come by and see so-and-so today. Is this afternoon a good time? Is there a good time for me to come? And the reason, and I'll tell you why, I'm going to give an example of why I do that. And I know this story personally because I witnessed it. I reached out to somebody that was in a chronic situation, in a very serious health situation. I reached out to their family member and said, I'd like to come by and see him today. Is this afternoon a good time? And this, by the way, is recently. This isn't from long ago. The daughter said, actually, it would be better if you didn't come today. And she went on to explain that they had had a very difficult time getting some rest and that this person had had a stroke. They were non-communicative, but they were alert and aware. And visitors were actually creating great frustration for the patient. This is someone that I knew really well. We were good friends. And the daughter said, if you come, it will. He's just now settling down. If you come, he'll be agitated. And we need rest, and he needs rest. Actually, today's not a good time.
That's good.
So I didn't come. But I heard later from someone that another minister did go. And the family member told me later that that minister got there about the time that they all were getting some rest. The patient had settled down. And that minister came and disrupted the patient and the person they're there to serve and ruined the rest of the afternoon into the evening for the patient and for the family. And they were doing a good thing. So that's a long story to illustrate it. But if possible and practical, communicate ahead of time and get clearance and buy-in from the family that your visit would, in fact, be helpful and not hurtful.
That's so good, Mike. I think so many times we're looking at our schedule and minister music, and maybe Thursday's our day for hospital visitation or Thursday afternoon, and it's so easy to get focused on my schedule, and this is my time slot to do it, and man, you might do more harm than good, so that's just fantastic.
And it's so easy. Most families are reachable, and a text hey, this is Mike. I've got it in my heart to come by today with 2 o'clock work.
Yeah.
And they might come right back and say 3:30 would be better, you know, or
and that's definitely something that technology enables. In the old days, there was no way to do that.
Yeah. You know? And you know what? And in the old days, hospitals sometimes had very strict visitation policies,
right,
depending on the condition of the patient. And I've seen ministers that would go into a visitation hour and dominate it when a family's been waiting for 2 days to get in there to see, and a minister come in there and change the whole dynamic. So I guess the principle I'm talking about with this, clear it ahead of time, is the principle would be to think this way. Don't make it about you.
Yeah.
Don't make it about your visit. Make it about what's best for that patient and what's best for that family. You're there to serve them. You're not there to put a check mark on your to-do list or on your ministerial accomplishment your report. So clear it ahead of time if you can. The second thing, this is real practical, you better knock before you walk in a hospital room every time.
Yes, you had better.
Every time.
Yes.
Now, it didn't take the 19-year-old Mike Harlan very many hospital visits to learn that lesson.
Yes.
But always knock and always wait on a reply. And if you don't get a reply and you think maybe the patient's asleep, you might just go up the hall to the nurse's station and say, can you tell me how Miss Johnson's doing? I hate to be picking that name, but always knock and be very sensitive about your entrance into a room. Would be very, very important.
No doubt.
You can... Well, I've got a story I could tell right now, but I'm not going to tell it. But let's just say the shock of my life was one time when I walked in a hospital room that I didn't knock.
You know, so many ministers, pastors, there's so many type A personalities there, and that just burst through. And maybe they're knocked, but they're walking in as they're knocking. And it's just kind of the way they enter every door.
Yeah.
And again, it's my schedule. I've got 2 hours to do this. I've got to get this done, and forgetting about
and,
being
and walking in
to that.
With this bigger than life personality, gregarious, whatever.
Yeah.
And there maybe settings when that entrance is needed and welcome, and you'll know that because you know this person that well. But sometimes you can walk in and they may have just gotten the worst news they've ever had in their lives.
That's
and you're
right.
Walking in with jokes and all that. I mean, you've just got to make it not be about you. And then here's a really big one. And I've seen people really be bad at this. And I've seen even friends that are visiting, not necessarily ministers, but friends in a room be bad at this. Is always defer to the medical professionals when they are in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And don't hang around unless you're asked to hang around. Here's the neurologist that had just come in to give the outcome of the MRI,
right.
And the family is waiting to hear. Now, there's some settings where you ought to be there and should be there, but it should be by invitation.
That's correct.
And you might even say to the person, I'd be happy to stay if you'd like, or I'm happy to step out. But where it really is problematic is when you see a minister get into a situation where some very private and personal information is being shared. They've been waiting all day on this talk with the doctor. They've got some questions they want to ask him that they wouldn't want to ask in front of you. Always excuse yourself. And when I was in a setting where I knew the people extremely well, I might do this. I might say, there's a person that's coming to mind right now. Her husband had had a cancer surgery, and the doctor was coming in. I happened to be there when the doctor came in, and I knew this could be bad news. I actually said to this lady, I said, would you like for me to stay? If not, I'm going to step out. And she said, I would like for you to stay. And so I did, but now I'm not in the way. Now I'm welcome into a conversation. And I have found in settings like that, that I could listen on behalf of the family. This is one of the greatest things a minister can do for family in a setting like that. And I've actually been there, Brian. You know our story. My wife, Teresa, diagnosed with breast cancer. I've actually experienced this where the doctor comes in, he's about to say something that's bad news.
Right.
That happened to me one time. And I can tell you, a family member won't hear another word he says for the next 15 minutes. Because your brain goes to a place that you don't even know you had in your brain about. Right. You start playing out the whole scenarios. He's still talking. You don't hear a word he says. And as a staff member in some of those settings, I've experienced the joy of listening on behalf of a family, knowing that they were probably missing a lot of what he's saying right now. And then the doctor exit the room and then be able to say, all right, let me tell you what he just said in case you missed it. But I only would do that by invitation. So remember, it's not about you at all. And always defer to the medical professionals. If they're there to run a IV or whatever, get out of the room. And unless they ask you to stay. And then The last thing I'd say about hospital visits is don't think that the longer you stay, the more you love them.
Yeah.
Brevity is probably the best policy by default, unless there's some timing, something that's happening that would require you to be there longer. But there's nothing – that 10-minute visit will mean just as much as that 45-minute mm-hmm. visit. And very often you need to err on the side of brevity. Right. When you're in a hospital situation.
Yeah, Mike, what I've found is there's oftentimes, you know, certainly with the person who's in the facility, that brevity is key. A lot of times there's that family in the waiting room. And sometimes there, if you want to have your lawn ministry visit, it's easy to focus on just the patient in the room, but there you have more people to minister to than that. And sometimes my dad was great about not just hospital patient visitation, but hospital family visitation.
Yeah.
He was as pastoral and ministerial in the waiting room, sometimes more so than in the patient's room. And
yeah.
It's important to remember that as well. The ministry responsibility outside the patient's room and in the waiting
and,
room.
And not just in the hospital itself, but
that's
those
right,
people,
at home.
Those extended people. And then if you can identify a way to serve that family while you're there, you know, is there somebody I could call for you? Is there something I could go get for you? Is there an appointment I can take care of? You know, you begin to find ways to serve. And the better you know your people, the easier that will be to identify those. I mean, we could talk about this all day long.
I think the
big principle here is to make it not be about you,
and
to put the needs of those people in front of your own needs, and to be sensitive about your presence, and be there to contribute, not to harm, and not to create challenges.
Along those lines, Mike, a lesson I've learned the hard way sometimes. We have a tendency as empathetic people, as musicians, oftentimes we can tend to overshare.
Yeah, exactly.
That thing you overheard,
or
even not even specifics, but we can even overshare in terms of how we relay and convey information. Some people don't even want the severity of what they're dealing with known to others, and so we have to be just so very careful.
Yeah, I never share to this day. I never share anything without permission. Never. I would say to anybody that I'm aware of a need, I would say to them, do I have your permission to share this?
Yeah.
And they might say, please share it. Or they might say, please don't share it. And you honor whatever wish they have. I never share information without permission. And just like Brian, I mean, I think about just me and you, just two friends.
Mm-hmm.
There have been things going on sometimes with our families or with each other. And how many times have we looked at each other and said, would you want me to share that? I'm not going to come back to Lifeway and tell them, you know, what your wife told me about you.
Right.
Yeah. You know, without her permission.
That's right.
You know,
that's
important.
But that's another thing I've learned is just you can really make a mistake there if you're not really careful with the best of intentions, wanting people to know how to pray and things like that. But boy, that's a prickly one. Well, Mike, what else other than hospital visitations? What other ministry situations?
We can talk about when counseling opportunities present themselves.
Mm.
Now,
one
of our popular podcasts we've had this past year, we had with Kirk Kirkland, who is a trained counselor.
That's right.
And also a great musician and singer. But and we intend on having Kirk back to do some more sessions on counseling. I'm not talking about counseling sessions when we're getting it or needing it.
Right.
I'm talking about if you're in ministry at church, you're going to become aware from time to time of family situations, of relational things that are happening. Maybe there's a marriage that's struggling and you become aware that of some of these things. And without ever pursuing it or even thinking you'll ever be in this position, you could find yourself in a position of giving advice or counseling people about some major, major league stuff. Maybe it's a parenting issue or even something as innocuous sounding as financial advice or whatever. I learned through the years, and my father-in-law, who was a pastor as well, helped me understand this early on, that when you are in a leadership position on a church staff, the people in the church will see you as an advisor and as a counselor about life. They just feel like you have a grasp of how God wired humanity and how we're supposed to live and life principles and all of that. And people are going to just think, you know, maybe Brian is somebody I could talk to about my son or my daughter or my marriage. And without even knowing it, you could find yourself in a situation where you're being asked for advice that if you really boiled it down, you may or may not be equipped to give.
That's right.
And you could actually say some things that are hurtful and harmful. Yeah. And I would say that the encouragement I would give to anybody there, it doesn't mean we can't share common sense feedback on a friend basis with people. We should do that with the friends and the people that we have in our lives. But know your lane and know your limitations there. And be really quick. When you see a situation that you know just as a person, they really need help here. Mm-hmm. Don't assume you're the one to give it. And then have some, and I learned this through the years in churches, I always knew where I could go.
Right.
I had some, I knew people that I could point people to. And I remember one situation in particular when I was able to say to someone who really needs some professional counseling help about a variety of emotional issues they were dealing with. And I could see it within 30 minutes of our first conversation. She wanted to come by and see me. And I went, you know what? This is something that you really should take this as someone that's more qualified and equipped to deal with this. And I was able to call someone and make the reference and referral and not put myself in a position of trying to be Superman in a counseling situation. I could help them all day long sing that song better or write a better lyric.
Right.
But I'm not ready to give them the tools they need to help their marriage improve. And understanding my limitations and be reluctant to step into really significant counseling situations.
Such a great word. I was reading not too long ago a biography of all things of Henry Kissinger, and it talked about the person writing the biography talked about how he stepped into things many times with reporters because you know, at the time, he's a professor at Harvard. And when a reporter asks a Harvard professor a question, the Harvard professor feels like the reporter thinks he should know the answer, therefore he must know the answer. Same thing happens in ministry. Any type of leadership or authority position like that. Mike, it happened 30 years ago as a teller at the credit union. People would hand me their money. I knew what was in their bank account, so they felt like I should know what was going on with their kids. I mean, you got to be so careful. And it can be easy for your insecurity to rise up. They think I should have an answer here, so I'd better have one. And you're just far better off. You are so right. You are far better off not swimming in lanes that you don't have any idea what you're doing.
Know your limitations.
That's a great piece of advice.
The further warning I would give here is also realize that when you're dealing with families and relationships, you're in some really delicate areas of people's lives. And very unintentionally, you could become an emotional connection with someone that if you were looking at it objectively, you would never allow it to happen. But it actually feeds our ego a little bit when we start feeling needed by someone else and they're depending on us emotionally. And we start finding ourselves giving that kind of emotional feedback and response to an individual. And before we know it, they've become someone that's become a real challenge for us. And I share about that from the voice of experience. More than once, I allowed, especially younger, when I was younger, I allowed, when I was in student ministry, I allowed a teenager to be too emotionally dependent on my role in their life. And that's just a setup for disaster at some point on many levels. You just have to be very careful that you don't allow you don't put yourself in that position of fixing people's lives just because you happen to lead the worship ministry of the church that they're involved in.
It is a great word, and it can happen so easily. And you're right, that intimacy and the dependency. The codependency of intimacy can really be a slippery slope, and you're in it before you know it, and before you even realize that you're dealing with a person that you're trying to lead that is way beyond where they ought to be in some of those areas. So, Mike, one thing I remember from being very young in ministry—
That was a long time ago, by the way.
Longer every day. But I remember just being terrified of even the thought of knocking on the door.
Yeah.
Especially, you talk about people you don't know very well, and it's your job now as the minister. I'm very young. So just intimidated by the whole process and almost looking forward to the person not being in the room. So I could tell the pastor, I went by, but I wasn't able to do it. I run down the hallway. way back.
Would
to
you
my
ever sneak into the room and slide a business card on the little table so you could prove that you were there?
Anything to avoid that in the early days. Yeah, sometimes the fear really was. It was overwhelming. So how would you say you?
Well, let's break it down. Let's make it real simple. Let's say you are. You are nervous about it, and rightfully so. As a matter of fact, I've been doing this a long time, and if I was knocking on the door of someone I didn't know, I'd be a little nervous about it, you know, because you're not knowing what you're walking into. But first of all, understand that way majority, 99.99999, are going to be thrilled that you came. So this isn't an adversarial situation. It's going to be people that recognize that you're doing something for their benefit, and they're going to be appreciative. So you, that should help your feelings just a little bit. When you walk in, a simple greeting, you would never ask them what's wrong. You don't want to ask them or be inquisitive about, well, how did the surgery go? And if it's the kind of a surgical procedure that they really wouldn't want to talk about, you wouldn't want to try to get into a medical conversation with them. Just, hey, it really, the script would be just this simple. Hi, Miss Jones. I wanted you to know I came by today just so you would be aware that our church is praying for you. And as a minister of music, I took great delight in always representing my pastor in moments like that.
Totally.
I would say, I want you to know, Brother John and I were talking earlier this week about your surgery, and we've been praying for you. I'm going to see him later today. I want to give him a full report of how you're doing. We just want you to know that we're thinking about you. And I didn't come by to take a lot of your time. I just want to let you know we're praying for you and thinking for you. And I would love to pray for you right now. Would that be okay?
Yeah.
And then have that prayer. And then often Miss Jones is going to say, well, I'm glad to finally get to meet you. I love the song you sang. And then the conversation just goes from there or whatever.
Absolutely.
But I would say keep the banter off of medical procedures.
Right.
And really focus on the concern that you're wanting to express. And then I think it's always appropriate to ask. And I always like to ask, could I pray for you?
Yeah.
And that answer is going to be yes. And then you'll have the joy of praying for that person.
Yeah, the things I heard you just say, Mike, you're representing the church, not just yourself.
Exactly.
If you have a fear that you're going to be inadequate, you're representing the church, you're representing your pastor, and you're certainly representing yourself too. And then you can always pray. If you don't have any idea what to do for them, you can always pray for them. That's
a
great word.
And then the genuine question, if there's anything I could do for you today,
absolutely.
Is there any way I could help you? Is there something you'd like for me to share with the pastor?
And and you do learn, Mike, over years in ministry, as you've said, that kind of fear comes early. You learn how appreciative people are.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the vast majority are just so thrilled, even honored sometimes.
Here's the thing about that appreciation thing. I've noticed through the years that if I had served someone in a ministry setting, I didn't get very much criticism from that person about what songs I was picking.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's right. That's right. If you were there in that moment.
It's a trust that you build that gives you the opportunity to influence them in other ways.
No doubt.
And of course, we don't make hospital visits to earn that, but one of the great benefits is when people know that you care about them, they're going to be willing to trust you a lot more with the decisions you're making in ministry.
That's so true.
So why don't we talk about funerals?
Oh.
Yeah, that's when there's
a death. Many lessons learned there.
Oh, yeah. When there's a death. And again, some of the principles we talk about hospital and other settings are true here, too. Don't make it about you.
Yeah.
You're there to encourage, to support, and don't underestimate the ministry of presence.
Yeah.
I have found in those settings, those grieving or mourning settings where you're encouraging or supporting someone spiritually, emotionally, that are going through loss, that you usually don't have to say a whole lot. I mean, some people say, I just don't know what I would say. You really don't have to say anything. I've had a number of times, and I think anybody that's done it for 30 or 40 years would have the similar kind of experience. But, man, I've had some really challenging funeral situations. I had one church I served, a person that was a close friend that was murdered. Somebody that sang in my choir. It was one of the most tragic things I've ever experienced in my life. And so you think, well, I don't even know what I would have to say. Well, I didn't say much.
Right.
I just was there with the husband, with the children, just trying to support. And then looking for ways to serve. I talked about that in the hospital setting of how can I serve you? How can I call you? What package could I drop off at UPS for you or whatever you can serve? And in a funeral situation, often who needs a ride from the airport? Or could I plan? Would you let me plan the music for this? Or could I contact the singer or whatever? I mean, just you begin to find ways to serve and realize that when people are walking through something like that, nobody is an expert at walking through grief.
Nobody is.
And so very often their brain is scattered. They're not thinking as clearly or as quickly because they're grappling with the reality, especially if it was a very sudden kind of a loss. And so you bring a calming influence, a voice of stability and just being there and praying with people and supporting people. And never underestimate what it means to just be present.
It's a great word, Mike.
Just be present.
I remember in a moment in my ministry where somebody lost a family member, actually a young girl, 8 years old, in a drowning accident. It was tragic. I was the only minister on staff that was in town through a series of events. And I did what I have done my whole life. I called my dad, who's my mentor. And dad told me just what you just said. He said, Brian, just be there. I said, Dad, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
He goes, just
be
there.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening, the funeral home called. The father couldn't take that call.
Yeah.
And I went with them and we actually met. I mean, imagine picking out a casket for your 8-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
I mean, and so I realized that there was nothing for me to say. It was just about being there.
Yeah.
And the only time I spoke is if he couldn't.
Yeah.
And he just asked me to.
Yeah. Would you answer?
And if I hadn't been there,
you couldn't have done that.
I couldn't have done it. So man, that's such a good word. And it's so true. There's nothing to say. There's nothing I could have said that at that moment in that instant was going to help that father. The Holy Spirit is the only.
As a matter of fact, I'll go further. More than likely, they would never remember what you said anyway.
That's right. Boy.
They wouldn't even remember it. They'd say, do you remember what I said when I was at? And they'd say, I have no idea what you said. Do you remember that I was there? And they'd say, absolutely. We'll never forget that you were there. I think about my assistant. A lot of people out there have met Anna Claire by now. Mm-hmm. Anna Claire's grandfather was someone I'd known for 30 years. Her grandfather was the head of the church music department for the Mississippi Baptist Convention.
Wow.
Had been a hero of mine, somebody that encouraged me and blessed me. This was long before Anna Claire was here at Lifeway, just a few years ago. But Graham Smith was his name. Graham actually helped us with the 2008 hymnal. Mm-hmm. He was also part of the 1991 hymnal. Well, Graham died. And I got word that Graham had died, and Jackson, Mississippi, it was a 6-hour drive, and I went, and the reason I went is because I could.
Yeah.
Now, I want everybody out there to understand there are going to be ministry opportunities that sometimes you just can't do.
Right.
I mean, recently I had a friend whose mother died. And I heard about it, found out when the funeral was going to be, and I couldn't. I was speaking somewhere. I was in another part of the country or whatever, and I just could not get there. But I made the phone call. I want to be there. I can't be there, all that. But the reason I went to Graham's funeral is because I could.
Yeah.
And we drove 6 hours. I didn't pray. I didn't sing. I wasn't on the program.
Yeah.
All I did was sit in the back of the room. Well, I want you to know everybody in that family reached out and said, thank you for being there.
Yeah,
I said it a different way earlier in this podcast, but I have never gone. I've never paid the price to be somewhere. And while I was there, thought, well, this was a waste of time.
Yeah,
I shouldn't have. I've never regretted going.
You've never regretted going, but you've regretted.
I have regretted not going.
That's so.
And I would tell any minister out there, if it's in your heart and you can, don't make that mistake of missing something. Because you will regret not going. You will never regret being somewhere where you're supposed to be.
Bearing one another's burdens, it's just foundational to the Christian faith. That's great, Mike.
So we've talked about hospitals. We've talked about counseling kind of settings. We've talked about funerals and those kinds of settings. The bottom line is this, Brian. If you deal with people in a church ministry, in a community of people that are believers, you're going to encounter constantly opportunities and really responsibilities to minister to people in those moments. And the last thing I would say about that is embrace that is one of the sweetest parts of what we get to do. And I would tell even the youngest listener that when they think about doing the church thing, they're thinking all about the songs and the platforms and all of that. And they think about this part of it and go, oh, no, what if I have to? Yeah. I want to tell you, oh, listen, the blessing will be yours if you embrace this part of your ministry. And watch your influence and your impact on people grow as you step into those moments that are pivotal moments in the lives of individuals. Now, I've got one more thought I want to throw in, and then I'm going to be quiet and let you close this thing out. There is a person in your church that you ought to consider yourself to be a first responder for this kind of ministry, and it is your pastor. Mm. And let me tell you, I've seen this over and over, experienced this on staffs. Very often, one of the most under-ministered to people in your church is your pastor.
Amen.
And the reason that's true is because most people think, well, that's the pastor, and everybody's going to, he doesn't need that, or everybody's going to go to that, whatever.
That's right.
And I'll never forget, I'll give one story that's just illustrative of my experience throughout the years. When I was at a church, one of the churches I served around the Jackson, Mississippi area, my pastor, who was a few years younger than me at that point, he and his wife were having a baby. And the baby was all set, and it was on the prayer list and been announced. Friday morning, she's going to the hospital. They're inducing. They're going to have a baby on Friday morning. And I was thinking all week, I was thinking, well, I won't go. There'll be a room full of people up there. I'll check on them later. No big deal. But the closer I got to it, the more I thought, I'm just going to go. I know it'll be crowded, but I'm just going to go. I won't stay long. And I got to the waiting room, and he was sitting in there by himself. Mm. Now, because this guy and his wife, neither one of them were from that area. Neither one of them had family there.
Yeah.
I asked him, I said, are your family? Yeah, my family's coming, but they're 6 hours away or whatever. And I sat there with my pastor, and I was the only person there. And then the baby came. But I remember, I've never forgotten that, because I have found through the years that often our pastors are the people that— And I'm going to tell you, you want to deepen that relationship.
Yeah.
You find a way to minister to your pastor when his mother dies, when her mother dies, when they have a child, when they have a surgery, whatever. You be a first responder to your pastor, and you'll take your relationship with that person to a whole another place. And the love and the trust that's built in a moment like that is something that you'll benefit from for a long time.
Amen. Well, we want to hear from you. What lessons have you learned that they didn't teach you in school? In these moments, we talked a lot, Mike, about the really difficult moments. There's also those celebratory moments,
sure,
the birth of a child, the graduation, the weddings, and all of those kinds of things. We'd love for you to email us, worshipatlifeway.com, your stories. You can also interact with us on our blog. We have a blog at worshiplife.com, and you can interact there. We'd love to hear the lessons you've learned and for you guys to be able to share that with each other. We also always ask you to share with us how we can pray for you, your family, and your ministry. We like to do that specifically here at Lifeway Worship. And we'd love for you to follow us on whatever social media platform you use, be it Instagram or Facebook or Twitter. You can find Lifeway Worship and Worship Life there in those areas. And we'd love to interact with you that way as well. Basically, any way we can keep this conversation going about worship and worship ministry, we want to be a part of it. Until next time, from Mike Harlan and the Worship Life Podcast, this is Brian Brown saying thanks for joining us this week, and we will be back together to talk about worship again very soon.